You see, this is the beginning of Channel One Over. Channel One Over in a continuation of the visit with Miss Chitty this Thursday afternoon and after at supper and after supper. The 19th of August, 1971. Channel Two Over. Channel One Over and a continuation of the visit with Miss Chitty this Thursday afternoon and at supper. The 19th of August, 1971. Channel One Over, and a continuation of the visit with Miss Chitty this Thursday afternoon, the 19th of August, 1971.
Yeah, I can understand that. And you'd all could use the same tub, couldn't you, from time to time? You wouldn't have to.
Well, if the water wasn't too dirty, two of us would use the same water.
Oh, yes.
too much trouble to draw it up and put it in there.
Oh, that's right.
And we didn't have hot water either.
So in the wintertime, you take a real short bath, wouldn't you?
We'd take washpan.
That's right, in front of the fire.
And maybe we'd have one of these here old-fashioned foot tubs, aluminum, you know.
Uh-huh.
Foot tub. Maybe run up on a little foot tub, you know, cut out of a keg or something.
Sure.
A long wind six step. We had plenty of ways of getting out of a bath if we wanted them.
Now, let me tell you, I didn't know about a syrup keg. How big are they? 50 gallons?
Yes, sir. Anywhere from 35 to 50 gallons.
And
mostly 35 gallons, but this just happened to be a big old, well, molasses barrel, you know. Papa got it from somebody. We had two of them. And then we had these other smaller tubs. Wash tubs. When we want to take a bath, we take them old big molasses tubs down. It wasn't one that heavy toted. You just take and turn it, just keep it rolling on the clothes thing, you know. Get to where you want to take your bath at. And one place we didn't have no smokehouse. And I can take Mama's quilt and flames and stick them up in the logs. We lived in a log house. Stick them up in the log. Have another one out here where I could.
Oh, yeah.
Post or something. Maybe a clothesline post would be pretty close. Take it and go across it. That way, it had the whole wall of the house. I'd take some of Mama's sheets and blankets and hang up the house and take me a bath like that.
Yes.
In the chimney corner, just get around pulling. Window, wooden window, wooden shutters, you know. Push them to enough to give you a space. Well, crack about like that. Just stick the quilting frame in, and then out in, and bring it down, kind of keep it up like a teepee, like an Indian's teepees, you know. Be so big and heavy, we couldn't carry them in the house. Oh, me and my cousins, we used to have a time.
That would make a good one, it looks to me like, one of them syrup barrels.
And then they made good wash tubs, too.
Good wash tubs, too. They had those bands around them, the hooks, you know, that held them good, didn't they?
Yes. And Papa would take them, re-tack them, you know, keep them from slipping off.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Now, he'd cut them right through the middle. He'd make two of them. Make two out of one. And then he'd leave one of the staves a little longer than the others?
I can show you. See in here.
Uh-huh.
See, now this is the barrel. He marked his mark all around with measure from end to end. Then he'd come here and he'd mark to here, and then he'd come over, roll the barrel on over, come on in, cut that, come on around, maybe be over here, he'd leave another one unmarked. Well, he'd start his sawing back here, he'd come to that one, then he turned around, go back on the other side, saw that. But in the ways he cut them out, and then somehow he always left a stave on each side of the barrel to make a handle.
Yeah.
And he'd work them staves while he'd make his the width of the handle, say like my finger here,
yeah,
down. And you get there, you'd sew that one off that. Well, that left that barrel with, that.
Washed up.
With a hole on the inside.
Yeah.
And he turned around and he cut the other one.
Uh-huh.
Well, there'd be, but how he done it, I don't know. There'd always be handles to them tubs.
Yeah.
But I know I've had hold of them enough. And then after you get them, the barrel sold half in two. There's two tubs. He'd take his saw, another saw, but his,
plane.
Drawing knife.
Drawing knife, yes.
Drawing knife.
And he'd smoothen that up just as slick as glass.
Yeah. It was good wood, you see.
And some of them wouldn't have, maybe wouldn't have, sometimes you'd have to leave it 6 where there'd be a hole in the side of one for a, he'd put it out somehow. You never got no sticks in your hand, splinters in.
Yeah.
And Papa, one time, though, before he went to farming, he worked sawmill work, worked time, turpentine work, and I don't know what all kinds of jobs, carpentry. He's even made barrels. He'd be at the cooper shop, they called it, you know, where they made the barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Put them staves up in there and get the head in.
Mm-hmm.
Put them in there and put them staves in, put them bands around it, and I turned it should go.
Yeah.
He made a barrel.
Now, that was your daddy.
That was my father. He was the old saying is he was a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
He could do everything.
Oh, that's nice.
He
yeah.
Raised and brought up on a farm. Run around, as he used to say, run around your shirt tails, you know, long shirts when they didn't know what pants were.
They didn't know what pants were. Where the shirt tail.
He said him and the little niggers getting fights. Of course they had their underwear, you know. But it was homemade. Everything was homemade.
Oh.
That time when he was growing up, his garments was all spun on the
wheel.
Homemade. And he said he remembered the first suit they made for him. He didn't want to wear it. Wanted his shirt. And
yeah.
He went to any of his aunts, and something went wrong, and she was going to get on to him about what they were doing. And she could try that. He played marbles on his shirt tail. See, his mother died when he was real small, and his grandmothers and his aunts. had hip raised general. Grandpa was in war. He was a soldier. Said he remember when Grandpa'd come home one time on furlough. Said yes. He says, "Is it really you, Pa?" He says, "Yes, Eddie, it's really me." He says, "Well, you don't look right with them that kind of clothes on." He says, "Well, they ain't give you no shirt and pants and coat yet. All these years I've been gone, they ain't put you in pants and regular little shirt and pants and coat. No, Papa, ain't gonna. I want my shirt. And some ain't beady, ain't so wrong with that." I says, "Well, Goodman says there ain't no use talk to him about wearing a coat, a real shirt and pants. Says he bawled his eyes out. Says he wants his shirt. All of them. Him, all the little niggers and everything on the plantation, you know. All of them wore the shirts. They had, and to think Grandma and all of them had to weave the cloths and thread in the cloth, cut them out of shirts and make them. And I don't know how many slaves Grandpa had when he went to war. And I don't know how many he had when he come back. He's taken me up on his knees many a time and told me the story of what he had to go through. How they'd go in green corn patch, you know, and get the roasting ears, get this big arm full of them, and get off somewheres and get down and roast them. Eat roasting ears roasted that way. He says, "I didn't tell you it wasn't much eating." He says, "But he sure gave us strength to keep going." He says, "Now I've got down a many a time wanted water. They come around and be puddled in the road. I got down and I drink water out of the hog puddles. We've run the hog side of it and drink the water," he said. And I thought about the men. How in the world did they manage to pull through without dying with some disease? God didn't want them to. He wanted them to keep on with what they were doing.
Them shirts, did you ever see them?
No, sir, I didn't see them.
That was way before your time.
Oh, my papa wasn't big enough to be a papa then.
Just a little boy.
He's growing up.
Yes. You see, that was the Confederate between the North and the South. Mm-hmm.
And he wore his shirts when he was little.
All little niggers, no. All the slaves, all of them. All the, the nigger men, they had their shirts and pants. But there's where the work come in, too. The white women had to weave, spin, and weave the clothes. And cut them out, make them with the fingers.
With the fingers.
Yeah. But in your time, there wasn't any of that anymore.
No, sir. They had on their suits.
Everything was bought in the store.
What wasn't made? Mama's made Papa's pants.
Oh.
Out of the material.
Yes, out of the material.
Yeah.
These are wrong. Jeans, made out of gray jeans,
oh,
blue cloth, you know.
She's made that?
She bought the cloth and make the pants.
Uh-huh.
She always kept her a pattern in pretty good shape, so when she needed to make new pants, she'd have them.
Yeah.
And she made these shirts, I reckon, up until we come to Florida in 1910, I guess she'd made his work shirts, make Eddie's clothes. Didn't have to buy no store-bought clothes for him unless she wanted to buy him a You know, a little dress suit or something like that. And he, Papa said he was like he was. He didn't like to wear it. Papa said he went to church many a time with his suit on when he was little.
Yeah.
And back in them days and times, they would have camp meetings. And they'd take the little nigger young ones and put them all over on one side of the tent over there. And the white ones all over on the other side. Lots of times, though, there'd be so many that they'd have to mix them up. They paid no mind. They went there to hear the preacher.
Yeah.
And generally, always a hard share of preaching and preaching. Father said they were having a big meeting, and back in them times, the women, they made the clothes. Their own clothes, their dresses, and everything was all long trailed way behind them. And long then there were bushels, had to build it up back here. Mm-hmm. Pop says he and another fellow, oh, there were several of them sitting on the seat. And the
now, that's your mama did that?
Yep. That was, well, she wore bustles when she was growing up in long dresses.
Yeah, yeah.
Mama worked in a factory where the maid clothes.
Well, she did.
And Papa worked on the farm where they worked in the shirts. He always said, everybody, you see them out there working in the hoeing and the shirt tails just a flopping. But of course, I all had on the underwear, you know. But it make him mad whenever they put on a pair of pants. They put on your, pull your shirt off and put your pants on and your others. I don't want to wear them things. They're hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as I was going to tell you, these camp meetings a lot of times, the boys would be, some of them be so mischievous, you know. They'd want them to have boards, you know, some black planks to sit down, long rows of them. Big old tent. And they'd be sitting there listening to the preacher, maybe. Some of them be singing. They would be singing. Come time to sing, they'd sing. And again, they'd be sitting there listening to the preacher, and these young girls said, several of them sitting right in front of these, him and a lot of, he didn't do it, but he said he seen it done, because he was sitting in his forehead. And this girl's kind of a, well, her people were more wealthier than his people, a lot of the others, you know. I don't. Preacher was preaching away, and Art One says, let's pray. And this boy had a little short pin knife. And her dress, the placket of her skirt back then, and her underskirt all open right up, where you could see that bustard in her. And he taking his knife real careful, kept looking. And he taking his knife, and cut that down there, about that big around in the back, because it come up and make big hump on the hips. And he said, when the praying was over, she straightened up, and boy, the sawdust began to squirt. Then he said he got up, moved on the other side of the other one. Said she kind of felt, and look back behind her, and the sawdust out of a bus. Father said he had to get out of dilation.
They had to do something. They would just sit as long as they could sit, hadn't they?
They'd stood as long as they could. These other little ones didn't, kept pushing that one. Moving the feet, you know, right? I thought it was nice. There's some.
Yeah.
They got them down there, and some of them began to fall off. Push them, and some little nigger boys on them. Made them fall off on them. And,
scoot them off.
Then he moved a little further down. The rest of them, the nigger boys, were on the side. Didn't get up, pick up the little old caps I had, a hat, and walked out. Then when he got to the door, said he just got outside, and he rolled.
Yeah.
He rolled.
Yeah.
He said, some of them said, like Eddie says, there ain't no... says, this ain't a hole in this. You don't have to get out here to roll.
Yeah.
But if you seen what I seen back there, you'd have to roll. Because I know I ain't got the Holy Ghost to roll on here, but I got the devil spirit.
And your daddy would tell this.
He'd tell it on the others. He didn't do it, but this other boy, the other boy was mischievous. He's all the time doing something.
Yeah.
Papa said he got the way I just try my best not to get on the bench with him. Because he'd make me lace out if I didn't get up and move.
Yes.
He said, they come out, didn't that girl come out a ball? Was quarreling like somebody had beat her. And they won't know what the matter. She said, you seen back out where all of a sudden somebody ripped my muscle and all the dust was rolling. And they'd go for several days and nights, you know. They'd even sleep at the camp. They'd tear food out and cook it out.
Sleep at the camp.
And he said he had a good time, but... And I know if Grandpa on either side had seen me anywhere close around with it, I imagine my long shirt wouldn't have been much good because I had it on. And some boy ripped the seam in his pants back there one time. And so he told Grandma, he says, Grandma, he says, no, it's Aunt Beatty. He says, Aunt Beatty, he says, I am not going to church, going to tent meeting or church meeting or any other meeting anymore. Why? Well, if you look at my back back here, you'll wonder why. Why, Eddie, what happened? He says, that boy ripped so-and-so's bustle open, ripped my pants open. And I know he done it just because he was sitting there right behind me. Said, well, I wish you'd quit getting around where that boy is. Said, I'm going to tell so-and-so about that boy. Well, she tell me he can do no good. He's all the time doing something.
Yeah. You know.
Papa said he got to where he'd get up closer to the front foot. Older folks was.
You know,
he wouldn't be blamed for
it. See, a knife then, you see, had some metal in it.
Yeah.
And they could put an edge on that knife.
And it was one of these little pin knives, huh?
Yeah.
Good.
It would just go right through that stuff and you wouldn't feel it.
Well, you see, the seam was in, or the edge was just. Rip them just a few stitches and it goes.
That's right.
Papa said he told Grandpa. Says, Pa, he says, you know, says we had some good camp meetings, says, and we had some dirty boys that went there every day and every night.
Yeah.
Says we go there to pray for peace. And now for people to come home, he says, everything we had done away with most. The northern Yankees is all, he's called blueberries. Papa says, Pa, says, you know there's a bunch of blueberries coming here. Mm-hmm. Says, Neville, what was his name? Says if he hadn't dug a big hole and taken cotton bagging and put down in there and throwed all of the meat down in there and covered it back over and cloud left places no to where we'd know where that hole was where we could get out of meat. Says and back down the other field. Says he rolled several barrels of syrup down there, hid them in the bushes. He says they come here and they just done away with almost all the corn and everything they could get hold of in the way of eats.
Yeah.
Just scattered it out, the corn and wheat and rye and things. See, they raise their own flour too, wheat. And they raised rye for the stock. And they raised rice, you know.
That's right. They used rice then.
Yes, they had plenty to eat on the farm, but the northern soldiers just come in and butcher us. And the niggas all run and hide, you know, and keep from being killed. And they drag a lot of the widow women out and beat them. Papa says, I tell you, Aunt Beatty stood her ground, nurse, and she had that old musket. Says, and she knows how to work it, too. The boy, she had gone bum, 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 all that. Said they wouldn't come in the house where she was at. And another aunt, they were all, let me see, it was three. No, it was two of them. It was old maids. The rest of the girls had married, you know. I think this was one of the single ones. And Papa says, she wasn't scared of them. Says, them old muskets we had back there. Says, she'd empty one and holler for another one. Yeah, there's a lot of little old niggas in there. Packing them things with shot, powder, wadding, and all right. Miss Andrea, I have one. Can you shoot it? No, ma'am, I scared of them. I said, I'll fix it, but I'm scared of them. And a lot of them would run and get under the beds and under the barns. And so there's a lot of people burnt out. They just burnt out a lot of people. Didn't burn out and destroy any of Grandpa's, neither one of Papa's grandfather's farms, but drove off a lot of hogs and cows and was going to take the mules, but they stood the ground, fought them off with the mules and the horses.
Now, that was your daddy telling you that? Now, he didn't come down here with you.
Mm-hmm. My father died in 28.
He brought you down here.
Oh, I thought that was Frank's father. There's your father.
Frank's father was they come from Carolina.
Yeah.
All of his folks. And all of mine came from Georgia.
But they didn't, his folks didn't get here, up here.
Well, you see, the war was all over the world at that time.
Yeah.
But Uncle Martin, his folks was all in Carolina when that was going on.
Yeah. Oh, Uncle Martin is the one that had the long whiskers.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that had the long white whiskers.
Uh-huh. Now, did he live longer than your father?
Mm-mm. He died in 22.
And he was the one in the big house.
And the big 8-room house that burned.
Yeah.
And My father died in 28. He was way up in his 70s. I don't know, just.
Was he?
See, he was baby boy of Grandpa's children. There's four boys.
Yeah.
And they were scattered out around here and there. And another time, Papa said, they had a reunion. This was after the war. They went to Grandma Brumble's or Grandma Dixon's. That's my great. That would be Papa's grandmother. Yeah, Papa's grandmother. Grandma Brumble's was Papa's mother's mother. And Grandma Dixon was his mother on his father's side. But anyway, they had this dinner. Had a big old log kitchen. Had a big old long table in there. Benches on the side. Benches at the end for them to sit on them. And said they had done fed the older folks. Done got the fed. Anyway, it come that time to go to the table. Said he have to get on one of the benches at the end of the table right at the door.
Now, how's your daddy?
How's my daddy? Said they were, well, they were almost grown then, you see. They had them all around the table, all around. And one of the aunts, she's Aunt Biddy. Aunt Nancy. Oh, wait, anyway, it was one of his aunts. She was going around serving there were several going around serving, dishing out the food, you know, asking them what they wanted. They come to rice. Sitting there, going on around, putting gravy on the rice. Said, Aunt Biddy, I believe it's Aunt Biddy, come, got just about back around where he was, and one of his cousins, well, his sister, this cousin's sister, and her and her brother were sitting there close together. Father said, you got, then she says, Simon says, you won't have gravy. They'd been used to saying sop. This new word gravy had come out, and Silas hadn't found it, you know, hadn't noticed it being a new word. So Silas, you have gravy on your rice? He kept sitting there. Kind of bumped him on the shoulder. Silas, you have gravy on your rice? Sister Hall, you want sop on your rice, Silas? The father said, all you had to do was just get over at Somerset and not so he'd sit there and look at Silas, wondering what he was going to say, you know. You have gravy on your... You have gravy, Silas? Silas didn't feel no mind. Silas, you have gravy? And then she calls her name Becky, I believe. You know, he said, Becky, hold up, hit him over there. You won't stop, Silas? He was already tickled, you know. Because it was a new word to him, but he knew that it had to be gravy or something like that. Had to be sop or something like that. But said Silas never would say you wanted any gravy. So Becky hit him over the head and said, you want sop, Silas? Yeah. And when he hollered out, yeah, said he just rolled up in a knot and turned off that thing into a double somerset. Right out the back door he went, and he kept going until he got down to the spring. They didn't stop. And one of the cooks at the kitchen said, "Eddie, where you going, boy? Ain't you eating your dinner?" He told her, "I can't eat nothing now." Got down then. Said, "Find out why some of the boys come down." Said, "Eddie, you ain't going to up and eat you down." So he laughed and he cried. And he hurt so bad from crying and laughing. He said, "I want y'all to leave me alone." I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "I can't go back in there while Silas and Dick is in there." I says, "Well, says ain't Biddy's wanting right, Nancy, which it was wanting know where you at. Why you wasn't there?" Said there was three of them sitting on that long bench. Here in the middle, and you get
yes, sir.
I don't know.
I remember that. I remember you could laugh until your stomach hurt.
Yeah. Mm. How much you take of this?
Teaspoon?
Huh? Teaspoon.
Yes. And whenever she said, "Ain't Biddy had to, Ain't Becky. Ain't Becky. Ain't Becky had to come down and get him, carry him back to the house to get his food."
Uh-huh.
"And just a little bit of water, please, ma'am."
"You want a little water?" "Oh, excuse me."
But he said that one time he left the table, none of them made him go back. Ain't Biddy, ain't Becky, ain't Nancy, one went down. Says, "Eddie, what's the matter, you ain't hungry?" Jordan says, "I said, I can't eat nothing now." Says, "I was hungry, so I sat down there and said, and Becky went and hit Silas over the head." And he went like, and she got laughing. Says, "Well, come on, eat your dinner." I said, "We want to get the table cleaned off now." And he went on back to the house. They all got to laughing at him about looking so raggedy after his last run. And some of them said, "I was just wondering why you had tumbled out of that, why you tumbled out of that door like you did." He told Grandpa about it. Said Grandpa had a big life over it. And some of them says, "Well, Jess," says, "Good," says, "you know good and well," says, "when Eddie gets tickled about anything, if he's around the table, you always tell him to get up and get out." Says, "And he sure had something to get tickled for today, though, I think." Says, "Becky up and walk Silas over." "And it won't stop, Silas." "Yeah." All of a sudden, Silas hadn't said, "Yeah," like he did. He probably could have stayed there, but.
Now, he never lived that down, did he? Everybody who was there remembered that.
I reckon so. Everyone was in that dining room that day. I imagine if they're living today, you mentioned Silas.
And they just have fun remembering it.
Now, did Uncle Martin tell you things like that, too?
No, sir. He told about having hard times getting anything to eat. Telling about drinking water out of hog waters when he was down there.
Yeah.
Going in people's corn patches, stealing corn.
But your daddy told you.
He'd always put up these camps. And my grandfather told me a whole lot about it. I sat on his lap a minute and I nodded and listened to him telling his war tales.
Oh, really?
He shot the big cannon. He always had to put the, or throw the big shell. He was good at chunking things. But they always had him there to work that cannon gun too. Said one time they were waiting for a mail caller, you know. Said a bunch of Yankees had got under a short-leaf pine down in the valley, and they were up on the edge of a mountain. And you have to crawl over and see what was going over there down the valley, like, you know. And said they were all down there looking to see how many more was going to accumulate up there. And they looked and seen in the bunch the Yankees had captured one of their soldiers, an old Irishman. Papa said that this Irishman seen them up there, you know, and they'd made signs to him, and they were, the Yankees were all gathered under the short-leaf pine, and told him to go around behind them, a kind of a bin like in there. And said, and he told me, says, well, I just got to step around here. Then he darted around then. At that time, though, the captain of Grandpa's regiment come up. He says, Jay, I'm good. Says, can you throw what do they call them, shells? No, she wasn't cannonballs.
Grenades,
yeah. One of these hand grenades. I don't know. He says, I can throw it. Says, it may not kill none of them. It might scare the devil out of them. He says, I seen an Irishman down there going around the corner. Says, we want to save him. He says, all right. He says, if you think you can throw it, just throw it. And you throw it, and you went right down the top of that short leaf pine. And there's small pine, you know, and it busted, and boy, you never seen a lack of bluebells a scattering out around. There's that old Irishman says, you just hang it on around, you come around up before you could get up to where they were at. He says, whew. Says, that was a narrow escape, I tell you. Says, faithful to Christ, I just knowed I was gone. That's the thing. I found out I wasn't close enough to be hit, since I put on a little more speed. Got up there, he says, well, Goodman, he says, I didn't know you was in this regiment here. He says, yes, he says, I'm in this one. He says, why? He says, well, I'll tell you. He said, boy, he says, you sure saved my life that time. Just cause if you hadn't done that, says they'd have been hunting me, and I was on my way for getting away, running away from.
Yeah.
And said some of them was reading the letters and all, but the captain says, well, says it's bad to interrupt their reading and all, says it. And I think you got one of my men down there. Grandpa says, nope, says, I think he's done going around the corner. I says, this thing goes down there, says, he'll be up there right. And he had been caught taken by the Yankees, you know. I think Grandpa or Papa said about a week they'd had him, you see. He was waiting to get.
He's just looking for a chance.
Just looking for a chance. He said, God sure was good with me then, said he. He said, I seen, you know, says, I was making the bend around you, and I seen no good hand go up. That thing come in. Boy, I lit out a little harder.
Oh, he saw the hand go up.
See, they didn't see nothing down there. Everybody else down where they could see what was going on. Just laying on the stomach on that ridge over there.
Yeah.
That was there.
And down there on the tree, they weren't looking.
They were laughing and talking and going on. And one of them had hollered at the Irishman to hurry up, get back here. About that time, the boom.
Now that was your granddaddy telling.
And I've heard my daddy tell it too, like his daddy told it. I've sat in his lap for many a night and heard him tell his war stories.
Your daddy? You the granddaddy?
My granddaddy.
You just sat in his lap and he just tell you the stories.
Well, we have company around, you know.
Sure.
We want to get into some old soldier come. Well, Goodman, how are you getting along? And all of a sudden, well, doing pretty good. I'm still able to tell war stories I learned. And he says, you see my baby sitting up here? Says she won't go to sleep as long as I'm telling her war stories. And I would, that, I must have been about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah. Well, now you see.
Find the mama and say, don't you want to go to bed? Grandpa's tired talking about wartime. I'm not sleeping, Mama. I'm so sleepy. You couldn't hold me. And he hugged me up. I've got a, they call them mugs them days, a drinking milk mug, you know. It's white china. And it's got a bunch of flowers on the side my grandfather gave me for a Christmas present.
Yeah.
But that was later on.
Yeah.
I got it packed up in the trunk. And I've also got a big white platter of my mother's. It's in that too. Margaret's got a bowl of mama's. It's about that big around, shallow like. That I've walked a many a hot day, sold postcards and garden and flower seeds. I got the money to pay for that set of dishes, and I think there was 24 pieces of the dishes, and that's the only thing that's left of them. And my stepmother sent that up to me when, and another little bowl, another set I worked for her.
How old were you when you did that?
Between 16 and 17.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you keep that in your trunk?
Margaret's got the bowl, but I got the platter in my mug. He had three of them, and there was only three of his granddaughters that was close to him that Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Two of them lived right across the woods from him, and we went up to spend Christmas with him. And we had a big snow that year. Ooh, it snowed. We'd get out there and play in the snow, throw one another down in the snow. Come in yellow froze, but we want to go back again.
Yeah.
And Grandfather's taking in three mugs out of the dresser drawers, one of these old-fashioned dressers. And had the little drawers up here. Then it had lamp shaft. There, has on each side, and then the glass, it leant against the wall, the full width of the dresser. And if you're taking this out of a real short drawer, he had short one here and a long one and a short one. And I kept his socks and handkerchiefs, and there's other things I think he kept in that middle drawer. But these three mugs, he had them down in there, he taken them out. Set them up on the edge of the dresser. Now he says, which one of these three do my little girl want? I looked at him, I think the one with the red flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Papa says, I know which one she'll take. Grandpa says, you shut up now. He said, let her pick her own mug. And Mama says, Well, sure, we know which ones you'll take. One had red, one had yellow, one had blue. So I got the red one. I always prayed about red when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Red. I had a pair of red boots with a tassel on the side.
Yeah.
And then I had a pair of Brogan shoes. They were high-top shoes with a brass cap across the toe. And I thought that was it.
It was, don't you know?
And
now that was dressy.
And I had a red flannel coat Mama made me. And a red hood. I said, told about the Red Riding Hood story then. I could have been Red Riding Hood. I had my red boots, my red coat.
Coat.
And she made an extra red cake to go on, but they were separate. And there was something involved. Anyway, when the Uncle Will's children come over, they all come over. Let me see. I don't know where they made a sleigh so they could come over without bogging up in the snow. But I know they were there. Grandpa says, "Now, girls," says, "I'm going to ask you all which one of these mugs you want." No, well, Clifford, no, Alice was the oldest. He says, "Which one you want, Alice?" So she takes the blue one. He says, "Well, Cliff," says, "how about you?" So she takes the pink one. And he says, "Well, baby, you won't get one you done take out."
Yes.
And what was it, Uncle Will and Aunt Laura brought over there for me? See, I was a baby 9 years before another one come along.
Oh.
Well, there was one was born and died right after me. But I still was a baby 9 years, because I was 9 years old when Brother Lee was born.
Oh, really?
No more babies in our family till Rosalie come along. And there's two older than me died. One younger than me died. Then Rosalie come along. There wasn't any more then till Eddie come along. And then Maggie. Margaret is her name, but we all call her Maggie. And that was our family, with 7 children in our family. And 3 girls and a boy lived. And then for 2 of us now.
You and Rosalie. Well,
she
now.
Pretty peaky up there Saturday morning.
Well, I wondered about that.
She looked awfully peaky. I told her, I'm like, You working yourself to death? Yeah,
yes.
Why don't you sit down and rest? I said, you look tired. Oh, I'm all right. I said, well, you're going to be sick, if you don't mind that. You're done sick. I said, well, I went to the doctor. Just give me another shot. Maybe. Because I feel better today. And I feel a whole lot better since you all come.
Yeah, that ever.
Pale, peaky, like she ain't got enough of blood or something.
Well, now.
I'm pale, too.
She didn't look pale over here.
Well,
or did she?
Well, you see, she went home and had a spell.
Yeah,
she passed out on
them
then.
Yeah,
I think she told Margaret that she was out 2 hours before they could get us to.
Yes. Well, now, what's her household over there now? Does she keep the household going herself?
Well, she and her daughter, but her daughter works and her granddaughter works. And of course, the grandson, he's in and out and about. She has to do cleaning up and everything. She don't have to do, but she does do it.
Yeah.
And a trailer, and it's a closed place. She says, I just can't stand it. She says, it gets too dirty. She says, I'm up here and I'm up there and I'm up yonder. And time to get one place mopped and back there again. I says, well, quit it. She says, I am someday. And they've got the foundation laid for her house. Her youngest daughter is the one she's staying with. She lives here. And her oldest daughter, she lives back over here in a trailer. Well, they putting her a little, building her a little frame house right on in here.
In the middle?
Well, the road comes around this way to Connie's. And of course, it comes from the highway, and that turns off here and goes into Barbara's. And then they've got the footpaths where they can walk back. They got a ditch kind of running through to run the water off from both places, and they got a bridge with the piece of plank stuff across there to walk on with. Pretty narrow for a person who don't see too good walking at night, moonlight, but they've got lights there, and lights down at Connie's all night.
Does she do some of the cooking?
Who?
Rosalie.
She does all the cooking, mostly. When they're all out off at work, and her son-in-law and her grandson, they're working up in Georgia, up there somewhere. They got two. And they stay the week up there, and they come home on the weekend.
So you've...
Rosalie didn't think you're going to have too much company when you plan for us to go up there. And Margaret and Lyman wouldn't go, and that upset us. She didn't say that's what she was crying about, but I called her crying 2 or 3 times. Said, I just know Margaret wasn't coming, though. I just know it. I know it. Said, I was talking to her. Said, you're always coming. And I want all of you to come now. Every time I'd say, you and Lemon, all of you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Said, but she didn't say yes, and we were, and we weren't. Says, but I might have known Margaret wasn't coming. Going up there on Saturday nights, you know. That's a little too far away for all of us to be off of the place on Saturday night. So much.
All of you at one time.
So we're planning so far. As I know now, we'll probably go up this Sunday week. Meet them at Kingsley Lake. Up in... have dinner and be together.
Have a picnic.
And then kind of a family reunion. Jake asked his grandma, he says, Grandma? He says, what is this, family reunion? She says, no, son. Says, this is not a family reunion. Says, we'd have to have more of our kin people. And Uncle Bennett's family, oh, that's Barbara's husband, says, and say Uncle Martin, Uncle Willie, and Aunt Sybil, Uncle Monroe, and Aunt Audrey, and the boys, and all of them, they'd come in. But then we would be having a family reunion.
Oh, that would be a reunion.
He said, well, Grandma, I said, you know. Uncle Martin, he said, well, now you don't know, nice. Just all get up Sunday morning, everyone, every family, furnish a couple of dishes, come and meet at the lake, have dinner, and wash to swim, let them swim, it's time to separate. It's have your family reunion at the lake.
Sure.
Well, I hope I'm stronger and feel better than I do taking this trip. It didn't seem to hurt me. I wasn't tired much.
You probably felt better than Rosalie.
Mm-hmm, she was a what?
Now, she has worked all her life.
And well, after Mama died, Papa married again. And she, of course, put Rosalie, taking her out of school and put her to work. And tried to let her go on to school and got her schooling. Didn't do it.
Oh, really?
And went on to say she had to do so and so when she was dating Rosalie. Dang, I hurt Rosalie.
Oh.
I said, well, I wanted her to get her schooling. And she come hold around. And she cooked. But she didn't cook the right kind of food. And the old soul's dead and gone, and he is too. But I'm telling you, when they lived there in Jacksonville, we went up to see Frank's sister, Mrs. Hoffman, Mamie Hoffman, and her family, and to see my father and her, all of them, you know what they say. Well, Rosalie was working at the time, I think she was working in Waycross, Georgia. She'd try to get work there in town where she could be close to Papa and Maggie, but Ma was so hellish and all with Eddie and Maggie. But we went there, and the day we went there, Ma had a mullet. See, shiny baby. As long as this is mad. Laying on a table or a shelf or something, right at the end of the dining table. Daddy Ann was a little tot. I mean, Margaret was a little tot. And the fish smelt thin like it was about done. Well, we were up there, are we up for 2 weeks? I'm not. And I've always put that end of the table where that fish is laying on the chef table, whatever, over every time. And Frank says, me like I smell fish. Smell like it's about past fish. Papa Lash says, yes, Mom's got one over there. It's been there 3 or 4 days. I said, well, why don't you clean it and cook it, eat it, or else throw it out? Mom says, I'll tend to my fish business and I get ready. I ain't seen them all. I didn't want to get no fuss with them. Huh. Yeah.